In a couple months, I'm planning a trip to my hometown of Buffalo to celebrate my 30-year high school reunion. The gray hair in my beard is actually starting to make sense now. 30 years since I walked across the stage and got my high school diploma. And I know that many things have changed in secondary education, high school education. But when I took high school math, we had to take Regents and algebra, and the way we, classified our math of algebra, course one was algebra one, course two, algebra two, course three was trigonometry, then you took calculus. I was advanced in math, so when I got to high school, I was already in course two, and part of the course two math curriculum was a huge section on logic. Now, how many people remember taking like logic in math? Do y'all remember that? Do y'all remember like the if P then Q, then like remember that stuff? Do they still do that in high school? High school students? Do you remember doing this in math? Logic. She's shaking her head like nope, I don't know. Yeah, this is actually a question from the course two final exam. I scored 100, by the way. But this was that's one of the questions. Like if that thing before the P is like if not Q, if not P then Q, and not P are true statements, then which statement is false? Now, for the life of me, I could not answer that question today. I have no clue what the answer is. And after all these years, after spending so much time in course two studying logic, I don't think I've ever used it in my entire life. I've never written down a P or Q statement. Maybe some of you engineers have done some of that, but that was, it's interesting that part of our instruction in math was about trying to make things make sense. We were learning conditional statements. We were learning the relationship between, items and trying to determine if those items, if the statement in full is true or not. It was about predictability. It was about trying to understand how things work. Now, one could argue that the essence of what we call in the Bible wisdom literature, it is a matter of predictability and the world of cause and effect. If this happens, then that will happen. Well, in the world depicted in the Bible, people were consumed with trying to figure out the cosmos, trying to figure out the world. That is, they wanted to know how the world works. They wanted to know their part in the world. They wanted to know God's part in the world, the cosmos. Now, honestly, that hasn't changed. Just a few days ago, I was reading in an article that astronomers were able to capture a picture of the black hole that's in the Milky Way. Any of you like star people, have you read that story and saw that? The black hole is reported to be 4 million times more massive than the sun, which means it has a mass of 4 million times. Now, the mass of the sun is 2 times 10 to the 30th power kilograms. Now, I tried to like plug those numbers in my calculator to calculate a number, and my calculator said, you've got to be kidding me. That's like big, right? That's how big this black hole is. Now, I'm not an astronomer, and I have no clue what this information means for our world. But I do know this, gas is high. Groceries are high. I went to the grocery store the other day. I had one of the small little baskets and I had like a few things. And when the total came up, I almost passed out. Groceries are high. I don't know about the black hole, but I know gas is high. I know groceries are high. I know that there's a disease going around killing people. I know that we still don't know everything about this disease. We're still fighting over it. I have kids that are becoming adults. I have diabetes. There is child trafficking all over this globe. There's racial genocide going on in all parts of this world. There are senseless killings in neighborhoods all over America. And the Buffalo Bills lost the game even though they had the lead with 13 seconds left. Somebody say, get over it, man. I'm trying. And church, I'm still trying to figure out how it all works. That is the situation humans have found themselves in since the beginning of time. It may be that in the 21st century, we have more immediate access to information because of technology and books and the ability to communicate more efficiently. But we in the 21st century share with our ancient ancestors the experience of life that is full of questions. The Old Testament contains a collection of writings that are produced to offer instruction about life on earth. Wisdom books. These writings seek to engage the human condition full of questions like why do good people suffer and why do bad people prosper? Is my bad situation the result of my wrongdoing, my sins? Is my good fortune the result of my good behavior? In many ways, the wisdom books provide direction and wise words about life. Yet in many ways, these texts raise more questions. Wisdom literature gives us a space to wrestle with life's toughest question. Again, time is not our best friend. There are three books that compose the books of wisdom. The book of Job, the book of Proverbs, and the book of Ecclesiastes. And some would add a fourth book, the Song of Songs or Song of Solomon. We could easily spend a four-week, five-week series on each book. I did preach a series on Ecclesiastes several years ago. If you're interested in listening to that, you can go to our website and look up the title, Meaningless to Meaning. I think it was a 4 or 5 week series on Ecclesiastes. I've preached on these books and touched on them in a little bit. We won't talk in great detail about all of the books. There are two in particular we're going to focus on today. Let me just say this about Song of Solomon. It's about sex, and that's all you need to know. These books contain a lot of poetry, the way it's written. Is written in lines in your Bibles. When you're reading these texts, you often see them arranged as a poem would be. A lot of the speeches are written in poetry. If you read the original languages, there's some rhyming and some rhythm that goes along with it. And so these books are often called poetic books as well, if you include the book of Psalms. You might have taken note of that poetic style, but I don't want you to think that because they're in poetic form that it's all about abstracts or you know, things that are just metaphors. These texts are speaking into the complexities of life. Take the book of Proverbs. The Proverbs are a collection of speeches, sayings and quips that compromise a commentary on life and how to live on earth. The majority of the book is a collection of sayings attributed to King Solomon, but not all. A better way to think about the sayings is that they are in the spirit of the wise King Solomon. He was regarded as the wisest person to ever live. The book contains lengthy speeches on the importance of wisdom and paying attention to that wisdom. If you read, say, Proverbs chapter 8 uses a metaphor of Lady Wisdom and this idea that this this personification of wisdom is to suggest the importance of having wisdom in your life. It's like having a good woman in your life. And, you know, the king is speaking to his son and using wisdom to say, this is what you all ought to seek after, Lady Wisdom. The personification of wisdom is a device meant to convince and communicate the place and power and purpose of wisdom. Now, while the speeches in Proverbs contain much to dissect and interpret, the short sayings throughout the book of Proverbs are simple quips that most can understand. You don't need a master's degree in theology or even life to understand some of these simple quips and these short phrases. Take, for instance, Proverbs chapter 3, verse number 5 and 6, one that many of you, if you've grown up in church, you've probably heard many times. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not rely on your own insight. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. Or Proverbs 15, 1 and 2. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise dispenses knowledge, but the mouths of fools pour out folly. I mean, when you think about that in just regular practice, like, that just makes sense, doesn't it? You know, your wife comes up to you and says, "Does this dress make me look fat?" A soft answer turns away wrath. You know, the tongue of the wise dispenses knowledge, but the mouths of fools pour out folly. Honey, you look beautiful in anything you wear. Huh? Proverbs. Proverbs 19 and verse number 22. What is desirable in a person is loyalty, and it is better to be poor than a liar. Proverbs 22 is a chapter that includes so many wise sayings that many have spoken these words not even knowing that they come from the Bible. Proverbs chapter 22, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, and favor is better than silver or gold. The rich and the poor have this in common: the Lord is the maker of them all. The clever see danger and hide, but the simple go in and suffer forward. You ever watch a horror film and there's always the doofus that wants to go in and check out the trouble? But the smart one's like, "Yeah, we bet not go in there." It's Proverbs. I'm telling you, horror films read Proverbs and then wrote movie scripts. The reward for humility and fear of the Lord is riches and honor and life. Thorns and snares are in the way of the perverse. The cautious will keep far from them. Train children in the right way, and when old, they will not stray from it. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is the slave of the lender. Whoever sows injustice will reap calamity, and the rod of anger will fail. Those who are generous are blessed, for they share their bread with the poor. Drive out the scoffer, and strife goes out. Quarreling and abuse will cease. Proverbs. You don't need to be an expert to understand these simple quips that help us to live a good life here on earth. The beauty of Proverbs seems to be that following these simple prompts will ensure a good life. But that beauty is also what prompts the problem with Proverbs. Enter Ecclesiastes and the book of Job. Both writings, in a sense, take issue with some of these simple prompts in the book of Proverbs. One of the summaries of Proverbs goes like this: if you do good, treat people right, give to the poor, and most importantly, follow God, everything will be all right. Well, that's where Job and Ecclesiastes come into play. You see, both Job and Ecclesiastes bring into question that formula: do good and you will receive good, do bad and you will receive bad fortune. And many of us find ourselves questioning that formula on some level, right? I know some of the most godly, I'm talking never do anything wrong people who are suffering from cancer or have experienced unthinkable tragedies. Back in the late 90s, I went to Rochester College, Michigan Christian, then Rochester College, and took a Greek class. I had to take Greek. I minored in Greek. And it's a class that starts out with like 30 people for Greek 1, and then, you know, Greek 1.5, the second semester, you're probably down to like 15. And then in Greek 2, there's like 10. And then, you know, Greek 3, there was 4 of us. And then Greek 4, there was just 2 of us. was me and a guy by the name of Nathan Dahlstrom. Nathan Dahlstrom was a tall, lanky, white dude. He was a cowboy. That's him. There's no other way to explain except he was an actual cowboy. He grew up in Montana, grew up taking care of horses and riding horses and rodeoing and everything. He came to Michigan to study, get his Bible degree. He wanted to study with a professor who had been his dad's professor at the University of New Mexico years ago. So he came all the way to study with Dr. Stephen Eckstein, one of my favorite professors. Nathan and I struck a really good friendship as we were in interpreting Greek. He was married. His wife's name was Melissa. I had a couple kids. Right now, he lives in Lubbock, and he's like this really big children's author. He's reading one of his books. He writes children's books. But prior to becoming an author, he wanted to spend time giving his life to disadvantaged kids. And so he worked for several years on a ranch for troubled boys, Timothy Hills Ranch. Anyone ever heard of that place out in Riverhead, Long Island? He worked there for several years and always worked with disadvantaged youth. A few years ago, they were in Texas, and his father, Nathan's father, was visiting, and he was hunting. And his grandfather aimed his rifle at his animal, the deer or whatever, and was in the process of pulling the trigger when Nathan's 9-year-old daughter walked in sight of the gun. And he shot her mistakenly and killed her. 9 years old. So why did that bad thing happen to this godly man? Like, is it because he sinned? Is it because the girl sinned? Is it because the grandfather sinned? Is it because of... You see how quick we are to affix sin to misfortune or affix good behavior to good fortune? That's the story of Job. The story of Job brings that into question. It brings it into purview. Like, what in the world is happening? Why do good people suffer? Why do bad people suffer? The book of Job, I think just kind of portrays a similar situation. I don't want to say worse or less. Both are tragic. My friends, situation, you may know of some folks who have gone through some similar situations. So just for a few moments, let's look at the book of Job and try to see what's going on with this book and how it speaks to us today. This is the first chapter of Job, chapter 1. There once was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. That man was blameless and upright, one who feared God and turned away from evil. There were born to him 7 sons and 3 daughters. He had 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 donkeys, and very many servants. So that this man was the greatest of all the people of the east. His sons used to go and hold feasts in one another's houses. In turn, they would send and invite their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. And when the feast days had run their course, Job would send and sanctify them, and he would rise early in the morning and offer burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, "It may be that my children have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." This is what Job always did. Here's the introduction. Job is a really, really, really religious and spiritual guy. There is no doubt that this is a godly man. He was not only great with all of his riches and all of his goods, but he was so spiritual, so religious. He feared God so much that he even went and did things for his kids to sanctify his children because he was so godly. Then the rest of the introduction, verse number 6. One day the heavenly beings came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. The Lord said to Satan, "Where have you come from?" Satan answered the Lord, "From going to and fro in the earth and from walking up and down on it." The Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? There is no one like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil." Then Satan answered the Lord, "Does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not put a fence around him and his house and all that he has? On every side you have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But stretch out your hand now and touch all that he has, and he will curse you to your face. The Lord said to Satan, very well, all that he has is in your power. Only do not stretch out your hand against him. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. This scene was a popular depiction of ancient scenarios depicting conversations between the gods and the heavenly host. Of particular note, when you see Satan in the book of Job, you shouldn't immediately think devil. More accurately, this character is the Shatan. For some reason, the translators of the Hebrew text, they leave off the definite article. There should be a the in front of Satan. And so it should read the Shatan or the accuser. And this scene is much like a legal courtroom where the accuser serves as the prosecutor. And on trial is Job and his seeming loving relationship and praise of Yahweh, Jehovah. The Shatan basically says to the Lord, the only reason Job is so loyal to you is because you gave him all of this stuff. He has riches and a beautiful family. Take it all away, and I bet he will curse you. And so that sets the stage for the unfolding of this unique narrative that is shocking. Job loses it all his animals that represented his great wealth. All his animals, they were stolen, and the servants that cared for them were murdered. His 10 children were eating at one of the siblings' houses, and it collapsed and it killed them all. And later Job was stricken with a sickness and had painful boils all over his body. All was lost, and he still stayed faithful to God. Can you see how questions can abound here in this situation? Do you see why we ask questions like, why do good people suffer? Do you see why it bugs us when we see good people going through ridiculous episodes of suffering and pain? Job didn't do anything to deserve this, and the author of this book makes it plain. Job did nothing wrong. The remainder of this book is full of interactions Job had with his wife, with his friends, and with the Lord himself. Those of you who've grown up in church and you've heard stories about Job and sermons on Job, often the wife is kind of maligned. You know, man, she told Job to curse God and die. She did. She said, you didn't do anything wrong. Just curse God and just have him knock you out of your misery. And we malign the wife. We'll say things like, see, she spoke the same words the Satan said. His wife is the only one in the book that believed him. I want you to know this too. You know who else lost everything? The wife. You know who else lost all of their children? The wife. I'm not sure that our judgments of the wife is rightly placed. Job interacts with his friends, and some friends they are. Long story short, his friends try over and over again to try to get Job to admit that he has sinned against God. They are convinced that he had done something to warrant this inordinate amount of suffering. But Job held his ground and refuted his friends. At one point, Job told these friends they were worthless. This is verse 1 through 3 of Job chapter 16. He says, Job answered, he's talking to one of the friends. He says, I have heard many such things. Miserable comforters are you all. Have windy words no limit, or what provokes you that keeps you to be talking? You ever have people that just say a lot of words, but they're not saying anything. They're not helpful. Church, I do want you to see this. It's just a lesson from the book of Job that I think is something for us to behold. At first, the friends come, and you know what they do with Job? They don't say a word. You know what they do? You just sit down with them. Sometimes when people are hurting and people are going through some stuff, they don't need your explanations. They don't need your wise words. They don't need the cliches. Sometimes all they need for you to do is just sit down with them. Just sit. You know what? You talk when they talk. You talk when they say, hey, could you? I'm asking you a question. I need you to answer me. But sometimes just sit in the room with them. Cry with them. Sit in the pain with them. That's what Job's friends did at first. But then they started talking, and Lord, it was not helpful. Got to the point where Job says, man, you're just no good. The book of Job displays Job and his quest to find meaning. He was raised learning the best in logic. He mastered the P's and Q's and conditional statements. He was not a scholar in course 2 algebra, but a follower of the covenant of the Lord. He probably understood better than anyone what the Lord meant when the people of God were told this in Deuteronomy: if you will obey the Lord your God by diligently observing all his commandments that I am commanding you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations of the earth. All these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you if you obey the Lord your God. Blessed shall you be in the city, and blessed shall you be in the field. Blessed shall you be the fruit of your womb, the fruit of your ground, and the fruit of your livestock, both the increase of your cattle and the issue of your flock. But similarly, Job would heed the warnings of those instructions in Deuteronomy. But if you will not obey the Lord your God by diligently observing all his commandments and decrees, which I am commanding you today, then all these curses shall come upon you. Curse shall be in the city. Curse shall you be in the field. Curse shall you be your basket and your kneading bowl. Cursed shall be the fruit of your womb, the fruit of your ground, the increase of your cattle, and the issue of your flock. Cursed shall you be when you come in, and cursed shall you be when you go out. The Lord will send upon you disaster and panic and frustration in everything you attempt to do until you are destroyed and perish quickly on account of the evil of your deeds, because you have forsaken me. Now, do you see where Job's friends get their information? They got their information from if you do good, good things will happen. But if you do bad, bad things will happen. So you can see why Job and why we ask these questions about life. Why do bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people? Job asked that question in Job 21, verse number 7. Why do the wicked live on, reach old age, and grow mighty in power? Their children are established in the presence and their offspring before their eyes. He would go on to say that the wicked disregard God, yet they still flourish in life. That isn't what the people were told in Deuteronomy. Later, the Lord would respond to Job, and the Lord defends himself against the charges that Job brings. The Lord basically questions Job on whether he has the authority or knowledge to question the goings on the earth. But in all of the Lord's comments, he never tells Job why. At the conclusion of the book, the Lord instructs the friends to repent for giving Job bad answers. Job's fortunes are restored twofold. He has more children. His daughters are the most beautiful daughters on the earth. And get this, contrary to what we teach, the text never says that Job's fortunes were restored because of his faithfulness. It never says the Lord gave Job everything back because he never cursed God and died. It just says he gave him all these things. And Job never knows the reason he lost everything, and he never learns the reason he received double in return later in life. Church, Job is a weird book, and when compared to Proverbs, it doesn't have the clear answers. But there is certainly something to take away from this rich book. Why else would it be included in the Hebrew canon? There are a few things to think about. This book deals with theodicy. Theodicy is the idea of retributive justice. That is, God always rewards good behavior and always punishes bad behaviors. And Job probes the place and actions of God in this world. This book also highlights that humans are trying their best to figure out what is going on behind the scenes. Note that the book of Job, the reader knows what's going on behind the scenes, but Job, his wife, his friends, they never know this. The book of Job also probes the problem of human suffering. It's real and is not always met with great answers to the why. Remember, Job and his wife lost everything. It serves little to no purpose to come down on Job or his wife for some of the things they say in the text. They were victims to the highest degree. Their story primarily requires our empathy and not our evaluation. Frankly, it's really difficult to arrive at a firm conclusion regarding the story of Job. But for us in the 21st century, the story of Job is helpful in our plight to shape the activities of the world. In short, not all bad things are the result of God's wrath. I don't believe that my friend's daughter was accidentally shot because of my friend's sin. And it would be extremely reckless of me or others to affix God's judgment on a tragedy like that. That's what Job's friends were trying to do. Likewise, I'm hesitant to affix someone's windfall of blessing to their spiritual obedience. If you read the conclusion of Job chapter 42 and try to find where it says Job was rewarded for his faithfulness, it doesn't say it. And while I am careful in not being critical of other churches, it drives me crazy when I hear churches preaching prosperity doctrines that suggest that if we would just give more money to God and be better and good, he's going to bless us with more money. I just don't read that in the Bible. I don't read that in Job. God's gifts to us are the result of his grace. We didn't earn it. Otherwise, it wouldn't be grace. So grace is, it's unearned favor or merit. I'm struggling to understand mass shootings that are more frequent. Seems like every other week there's a mass shooting somewhere. Absolutely finding it hard to make sense of this tragedy in Buffalo because that's my hometown. I grew up minutes away from this grocery store on Jefferson Avenue in Buffalo, New York, on the east side. I used to ride my bike in that neighborhood to play with friends. a man who seemingly had some racial and racist intentions came to a historically black neighborhood and sought to harm people of color. There were some Caucasians who were struck as well. Probably some employees, but primarily the shoppers at that store are African American. He shot one of the security guards. The security guard was a retired Buffalo police officer, and he engaged the shooter, but because the shooter had on armor, his gun did nothing, and the assailant shot and killed the security guard. I just learned a few days ago that my sister's husband just took a position at that grocery store as a security guard. And yesterday was his day off. I was telling someone that yesterday, oh man, this really hits home, man. That could have been my sister's husband. This is how she responded to me. Isn't God good? I said, yeah, he's good all the time. But I wonder if the family of the security guard that was murdered would say the same thing. Do you see the problem with affixing fortune with our good behavior and misfortune with bad behavior? I don't know anything about that other security guard. From reports, he was a really good man, very active in the community, active in his church. I don't know why bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people. I just know it happens. That's the world we live in. It's a world that somehow we're going to have to come to grips with, because the more energy we spend trying to make sense out of senselessness, the more crazy we're going to drive ourselves. The book of Job is a story about people driving themselves crazy, trying to figure it out. And essentially, God's answer is, the world is a chaotic place, and things will happen, even to the faithful ones, even to the ones. I would think that everyone in here who's grown up in church and know about Jesus, like, Jesus didn't sin. Jesus treated everybody right. Jesus wasn't exorbitant in his possessions. He was like the perfect guy. And they still killed him. It stands to reason that even those of us that do our best to do good, we're going to get cancer. We're going to have family members that are murdered. We ourselves may be the victims of a tragedy, a shooting, car accident. It happens. But even in the midst of all of that, all that was going on with Job, do you know one of the things that Job says? Job 19, verse number 25. I know that my Redeemer lives. Even in the midst of all of these questions and doubts, and let me tell you something, church. God is big enough to handle our doubts. He's big enough to handle our questions. He's big enough to handle our whys. He's big enough to handle our laments and our screams and our yells. Because life can be hard. But we do good when we stop trying to fix good with our... Listen, God gives to us because he's a gracious God. That's his character. Yeah, there are moments, there are things that we do that can result in an extra blessing or a blessing of the normal kind. And there are things that we can do sinful that will result in harm. If I choose to go rob a bank and I'm a... confronted by the authorities and I'm shot and killed. Yeah, that's a consequence of my sinful. Yeah, of course that happens. But trying to fix every little thing to every cause, and trying to do the P's and the Q's with life, church is going to be a frustrating experience. A better experience is to live and to lean into God and to be still. We're going to sing a song about that. Still, praise him, you can come up. We haven't talked a lot about Ecclesiastes. Book of Ecclesiastes kind of has some of the same questions and some of the same dealings with life. And there's a person who's talking about what the preacher, Qoheleth, the preacher, he says this and he says this and he says this. And at the end of the book, the person who's like the narrator basically kind of says, the preacher had a lot of stuff to say, and it was some good, but a lot of what he said just wasn't right. In fact, here is the issue. Here is the whole duty of mankind. Fear God and keep his commandments. That's the whole duty of man. It's this idea of grounding yourself in God and being still. Being still with those who are going to be asking those questions. Why did my loved one get shot at the grocery store? Why did my security guard, why was that the day that my husband was to work and not Dion's brother-in-law? Those questions are going to be there. And listen, God is okay with the questions. It's okay. Ask them. Cry out to them. But while you're asking the questions, take a position of stillness. And come to a place where you can see that the Redeemer lives, that God is still God, that God is still active in trying to bring order to this chaos. And God is using us to bring order to this chaos. Don't let the frustration lead you away from God. Allow the frustration to lead you to God. The blessing of the story of Job is that through all that Job went through, he kept going to God. And that's my simple message for you today. It's no matter what you are going through, no matter what question you have, keep going to God and be still. As we're singing this song, I pray that the lyrics, the words, the spirit of it will penetrate your heart. And if there is something unresolved in your life that you want the body of Christ to walk alongside you with, we are here for you. We are here to pray with you, here to pray over you, here to wrestle with these questions with you. But be still and know that He is God.